Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the Smooth Operator edition. As Dave Lapham joins me to discuss the selection of Joe Burrow, number one overall in the NFL draft, and look ahead to round two and the players that are still available for Cincinnati. Plus, my conversation with Boomer Esiason as the last quarterback to lead the Bengals to the Super Bowl discusses the QB that we all hope will be the next quarterback to lead the Bengals to the Super Bowl. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since Grater's Chunky Chunky Hippo Ice Cream. The first round of the draft lasted for 4 hours, and at some point, I needed a snack. Well, this week, I sampled Grater's Chunky Chunky Hippo Ice Cream for the first time, and it's unbelievable. Roasted peanuts and milk chocolate caramel truffles combined in sweet and creamy toffee ice cream. I think we have about a half a pint left, and I have strategically stashed it in the back of the freezer. I'm looking forward to indulging again during the second night of the draft. Now time for my conversation with Dave Lapham as he joined me moments after round one ended. Lap, we had the opportunity to take part in a virtual news conference with Joe Burrow a little while after he was drafted number one overall by Cincinnati. And I was reminded of his meeting with the Bengals at the scouting combine when one person in the room said it was the best one of those interviews they had ever taken part in. I felt the same way watching his news conference with Cincinnati area reporters. You talk about impressive. He answered every question perfectly.
He did. And, I went to the combine for his press conference there. Same thing. I mean, I asked him, what do you think your strength is? And he said, leadership, rallying people. He has innate people skills. You know, I mean, he's just one of those guys that gets it. People are going to gravitate toward him. They're going to believe in him. He's special. He is extremely special. And seen him twice now, and both times, not just a home run, a grand salami. I mean, he's something else.
By the time he talked to Cincinnati area reporters, he had probably done a million interviews. He was on with national reporters. I'm sure he did a news conference with the bigwig, so to speak. So by the time he got around to all of us, he had to be a little bit mentally fried, and yet he turned it on, recognizing that this was going to be the first impression that he made with people he'll be dealing with on a regular basis, his first impression with many Cincinnati fans. And those are the kinds of things you have to do if you are in that spot.
There's no doubt. I mean, I think, he grew up around the game. And, I'm sure he's heard his dad talk about, guys that handled themselves well and guys that didn't, and lessons to be learned from that. And I just think that his personality is that, though. I don't think he never has to put on any kind of false air or anything else. All he has to be is Joe Burrow. And I mean, it's just, like I said before, his teammates at Ohio State think the world of him. His teammates in high school think the world of him. You know, when college kids travel to the national championship game on their own dime to watch your old teammate win a national championship, that speaks volumes. And, he impacts people. And I think, you know, he's going to be, When you look at it, Dan, he's 23 years old. He's not like a 20-year-old kid, coming into the National Football League. It's not like a 20-year-old kid is going to a huddle with a bunch of 30-year-old guys. He's 23 years old, and the team, all these guys they signed in free agency, are into just finishing their first contract. So, a lot of them are in their, mid to late 20s themselves. I mean, it's not like he's going to be dealing with a bunch of, crusty old veteran guys. Now, he still has to prove himself. I mean, he's the new guy. He's the young buck. But, I don't think he's going to have any difficulty whatsoever being the leader of the pack. I think that's going to come very naturally and very easily to him, and I think he's going to do a hell of a job.
He was so good, he even nailed the question about Cincinnati-style chili, which he famously blasted in an interview a year or two ago, whenever that was. And when asked about it again today, he said, you know what? I have to give it another try. Maybe my taste buds have changed. That is a great answer for that question.
It is. And, you know, and I asked him about Andy Dalton, you know, and I thought he handled that perfectly, because that's going to be an awkward situation for both, really. But they're both cut from the same cloth in terms of the type of human being they are. So I don't anticipate, you know, any issue there. If in fact, you know, Andy and Joe Burrow have to interact whatsoever. And I think he handled that well. He said, you know, I have no trouble with Andy Dalton in the quarterback room, with, you know, having a veteran guy to lean on, or I have no problem at all if that's not the case and it's a bunch of young guys in the quarterback room, and I'll handle that as well. And I think that's the thing that, you know, people are talking about. Is it swagger? Is it earned confidence? Like, you know, like Zach was categorizing it. He does have, when needed, he definitely has an edge. But bottom line is, he has supreme, I mean, uber supreme people skills. He really does at a very young age. It's incredible to watch.
So before we had the opportunity to talk to Joe Burrow, we did talk to Zach Taylor and also offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. What stood out from their media sessions with Cincinnati reporters?
His effectiveness, you know, under pressure is something that when pressured was something that the coaching staff took note of. I think there is no question about that. I do think they feel they're going to be able to get him up to speed quickly. There's a lot of carryover with concepts, offensive concepts that Joe Brady had installed down there at LSU. I mean, like we talked about earlier in the week, Dan, you know, this is a pro style offense. This, but I like the term that I heard here during the draft coverage, spread and shred. Joe Burrow and Joe Brady went down to LSU and said, we're going to put five receivers out. There's going to be five linemen blocking, and Joe Burrow, you're going to read it and get the ball out of your hand. You're going to sight adjust to things you need to sight adjust to. You're going to process the information quickly. And he spread those defenses out and made them declare some things and shredded them. There's no question about it. And he went from his junior year, they did that like 32% of the time. His senior year, they did it 87% of the time. And that was the key that unlocked Joe Burrow. So there's no question. I think Zach feels, you know, pretty good about that. That's what he wants to try to do. That's what that's, you know, the passing game like that, with the one back set and spreading the field with either tight ends or, you know, a tight end or just all receivers, multiple receivers, or even, you know, going totally empty with the back out of the backfield, you know, in the slot or something as well. I mean, it gives him a lot of diversity, a lot of ways to attack in the passing game. And Joe Burrow can read it out. I mean, he can diagnose. I mean, he's wired right. That's what Brian Callahan's, I thought, quote was interesting. Wired right to diagnose the game. He's always prepared. And, you know, I've asked him about, okay, there's preparation and then there's, you know, intelligent preparation and basically efficient preparation. You know, you can look at tape, and his answer was great.
He lit right up when you asked that. Yep, he really got excited to answer that. Joe Burrow did.
Yeah, he did. You know, he said, you're right. He said, you can watch tape for 5 hours. Well, what'd you learn? But if you have a system, if you have a, you know, a way you're going to go about breaking down tape and a process that you're going to go through. And he found a process when he was at LSU on a daily basis that he believes in. And that was something else that Zach talked about as well when they talked to him. You know, how did you go about getting ready for football games at LSU? And, you know, went through all of that with Zach. He didn't really describe it all with us, but he talked about that he had that process. And Zach, I think, obviously signed off on that mentally and said, we expect you to do the same type of thing here in Cincinnati. I mean, I think he's a competitive learner. You know, he's a cutthroat competitor. He's a competitive learner. He's a competitive problem solver. When things break down on the field, I mean, he's going to be a lot of fun, I think, for the coaches. It's going to be like, I remember talking to Tom Moore, who's now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, he's down there working with Tom Brady. But he was in Indianapolis with Peyton Manning, and I got to know Tom Moore when he was coaching in Pittsburgh, and Tom Moore said that Peyton Manning made him a better coach. He said Peyton Manning knew everything inside out. And if I wasn't on my best, if I wasn't on my toes, he said, you know, Peyton was the smartest kid in the class, and he'd embarrass me. So I think Joe Burrow is gonna lift the whole boat. I think that's the kind of guy he's going to be. I think he's going to be like Peyton Manning. Tom Brady's the same way. You know, coaches talk about Tom Brady. You go into a meeting with Tom Brady, man, you're going to have all your I's dotted and all your T's crossed because he'll embarrass you. You know, he'll find something that if you were lax in an area, Tom Brady won't hesitate to point it out. And Joe Burrow's got that kind of football IQ as well. And I think that just makes everybody better. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic to witness with his development here in Cincinnati.
You mentioned the LSU spread and shred offense. And early in the draft process, a lot of people suggested, well, maybe he is the product of Joe Brady's creativity and just about anybody could have put up big numbers in that offense. Maybe people looked at this backward the whole time. Maybe his junior year, the offense was so lame that no quarterback was going to put up huge numbers.
Yeah, I think he was in part of the transition of, I mean, the LSU offense under Les Miles, archaic wasn't the word for it. Prehistoric might have been a better description. I mean, he just thought, you know, Les, I'm going to line up with bigger, better people than you. I'm not going to try to fool anybody. I'm not going to make it very sexy. I'm just going to try to pound you with the Leonard Fournettes of the world or whatever. And Alabama would always smoke them, you know. That Coach O's like, you know, we gotta change that. Go get Joe Brady from the New Orleans Saints, incorporate some of the NFL style of offense, and he's got a very intelligent quarterback that picked it all up, and he's surrounded by good talent, obviously. But it was interesting when I asked Joe, you know, when did you realize that you guys might have a special season like you had? His answer was interesting. Walking off the field. After his junior year, walking off the field in the bowl game, he said, you know, he felt like they were on their way. A lot of guys were returning. He knew how hard they were going to work. But, you know, he didn't realize that the coup de grace was going to be Joe Brady. And that was the propellant they needed to take him right to the top.
One more thought on Joe Burrow before we move on to round two. One other thing that Brian Callahan, the offensive coordinator, said that really caught my ear was that he's the most accurate college quarterback he has ever studied. The only other person that he mentioned in the same breath was Andrew Luck. Not a bad comp.
No question. No question about it. And you know, when you look at it, it's interesting. You did a great interview with Boomer Esiason, and Boomer Esiason said that, you know, there's some similarities with what you went on with Joe Burrow and me at Maryland. You know, we were running a veer offense at Maryland, and it really didn't accentuate my talents. And Coach Ross comes in and puts in a pro-style offense, and now I, you know, show the NFL what kind of physical abilities I have. Well, same type of thing with Joe Burrow, and Joe Brady comes in, and boom, you know, there's and the other great quarterback in Bengals lore, the two league MVPs, Kenny Anderson, the similarities there. Kenny Anderson went to Augustana on a basketball scholarship. Kenny Anderson and Dan Issel were high school teammates in basketball. Kenny was one hell of a guard in basketball. And he, you know, the basketball coach basically said, you know, yeah, you can go ahead and try out for football. The football coach said, you know, we need you. We heard you play quarterback. But his sport was, and Joe Burrow was All-State Player of the Year in basketball and football in high school. And, you know, he hits this in this three-point contest during the Peach Bowl against Oklahoma. His team's getting smoked, and he goes 6-for-6 from three-point land when he shoots to win the thing. You know, there's that competitive streak once again in him. But Kenny Anderson was an accurate shooter in basketball, accurate passer. I mean, you know, see the court in basketball, see the field in football. I mean, he's got a lot of analogies to two of the greatest quarterbacks that had tremendous careers for the Cincinnati Bengals with league MVPs. If Joe Burrow can come close, that would be great.
All right, time to move on to round two. Our dream linebackers are not there. Kenneth Murray went 23rd to the Chargers. Patrick Queen went 28th to the Ravens. and the guy that you had predicted on yesterday's podcast as a possibility to the Bengals with the 33rd overall pick actually went in round one. Jordan Brooks, 27th overall to Seattle. So the linebackers at the top of the wish list are not there. Zach Bond is, along with some great players at other positions.
Yeah, Zach Bond is there. But, you know, I think 33 might be a little rich. But the way the run was made, I mean, the three picks in a row, Jordan Brooks goes to Seattle, Patrick Queen goes to Baltimore, and Isaiah Wilson goes to Tennessee. So I'm thinking, all right, well, you know, the run on offensive tackles, that was pretty extraordinary. Six offensive tackles go in the first round, as many offensive tackles as wide receivers. You know, wide receiver is supposed to be the deepest, one of the deepest positions. Well, six tackles go in the first round. What's that tell you? Four quarterbacks go. You know, Love does go. The Green Bay Packers trade to get Love. So that fourth quarterback went. But, you know, six receivers and six offensive line, only one running back, the last pick of the draft, the first round. But, yeah, I mean, man, the runs came at different times. But the linebacker position got hit late on a run. And I'm telling you, right now with Wilson gone, it's like, all right, who's left? Well, we got Josh Jones is there.
Yep.
The only knock I have on him, in my opinion, is he's got short arms. You know, for a guy as big and tall as he is, he's kind of a little T-Rex action. But, you know, you look at Gross Matos, the edge guy from Penn State's there. A lot of people had him in the first round. Epinenza from Iowa is there. Jalen Johnson, the cornerback you talked about, Dan. Jeff Gladney went late, but Chenault, Mims, Higgins. I mean, there's a lot of good football players there, but I think with all of these guys that are there at 33, I say move back. I mean, if you have some of these guys, if they're on the Bengals list, if you've got a couple of defensive linemen, an offensive lineman, and three receivers, you know, you feel like there's five or six guys that are in the same type of category. You have them all kind of bunched up on your board. Move back. If somebody really needs to address the position group more than you do, particularly like at the wide receiver position or whatever your call is, and they're going to give you some value, and you can go back four picks, and you have six or five or six guys on your board that you'd feel comfortable with, make that trade, do that deal. But, yeah, where's the partner? Because, you know, the quarterback did go, Love did go, you know, in the 20s to the Green Bay Packers, the 26th overall pick. So who is the person that is the one when everybody resets their boards like the Bengals are doing right now, and trying to decide what they're going to do? Are they going to keep that pick at 33, or are they going to try to trade back? And, you know, what kind of phone calls will they be getting, if any? So it's going to be interesting to see.
So you ran off a bunch of names, and I wrote down many of the same ones as the highest-rated players still available. I wrote down four wide receivers, T. Higgins from Clemson, Denzel Mims from Baylor, who ran a 4.38 at 6'3", 205 pounds, LaVisca Chenault from Colorado, and Michael Pittman from USC. A couple of offensive linemen. You mentioned Josh Jones, 6'6", out of Houston. There's also Ezra Cleveland, 6'6", out of Boise State. Defensive ends, Yetur Gross-Matos from Penn State, had 9.5 sacks last year. A.J. Epinesa from Iowa, 11.5 sacks last year, 10.5 the year before, but he ran a 5.04 at the combine. That's kind of the knock on him. Zach Bond, outside linebacker slash edge rusher from Wisconsin. The cornerbacks include Jalen Johnson from Utah and Trayvon Diggs from Alabama, Stephon's younger brother. And then you've got a defensive tackle who's frequently been listed as a first-round talent, Ross Blacklock from TCU.
And Gallimore, also from Oklahoma. I think those two defensive tackles have some value, you know, in the early second round. So, yeah, there's you know, more than a handful of guys. And how many of them, how far down the board do the Bengals have some of these guys? Or did they have some of them at the end of the first round? Because, you know, let's face it, there's always surprise picks in the first round. And this draft's no exception. I mean, I think people would be surprised that this cornerback from Auburn, Igbinohenny or whatever, he went. I mean, I didn't have him necessarily rated, rated at that point. I was surprised that Thomas went as early as he did. I wasn't surprised he was a first round guy to go number four in the draft to the New York Giants. It's like, whew, man, I think he's a solid player, but, there's always a couple of draft picks and done in different orders than people had. I thought, Arnett from Ohio State, for him to go as high as he did to the Raiders was pretty extraordinary. Rager going to the Philadelphia Eagles, I think probably surprised some people. He goes ahead of Jefferson, and Murray sliding as far back as he slid. There's always. Everybody always has different values on players, but there is. I mean, there's edge people, there's defensive tackles. The offensive tackle position is picked over pretty well. The best interior guy, Ruiz, went. What do you think? I mean, I don't think you go in a panic mode and say, all right, well, we're going to take somebody we have rated more in the late two, early three, and honestly, that's where I have Bond. But when the run happens, maybe you say, geez, maybe we do take Bond at 33. I think you can trade back and still get Bond, as well as trading back and still get, Jones and a lot of these other guys. But you never know. But if somebody says, all right, well, I want to trade up because I really have him evaluated, and I don't know how the Bengals have him evaluated, on their board. But if a team calls us and they're like, we have to have, boom, whichever one of these players we talked about it is, you trade back. And hopefully they're not back so far. You certainly don't trade back to the point where any of the 5, 6, 7, 8 people you're talking about, you don't trade out of the 30s. Once you get into the 40s, it's a different ball game. You still stay in the 30s and pick up extra draft picks.
So I did a deep dive into the point value chart today for if they trade back in the second round. If they move back 6 picks, you're looking at a fourth rounder. So a second rounder and a fourth rounder, if the team has that combination that's trying to trade with you.
Right.
If you go back like 7 to 13, you can get into the bottom of the third round with the extra pick. Then 14 to 20, low 20s, you can get to the middle of the third round, and then if the pick is at the end of the second round that you're getting, you could get a high third round pick to pair with it. That's strictly based on the points chart, and again, the team, the trading partner, would have to have that combination to make the points work. Otherwise, if the second pick is one round later, then you get another pick thrown in as well.
Yeah, and you look at it and you say, all right, well, that's why when hit the point with Brooks of Seattle, Queen with Baltimore, and Wilson with Tennessee, any one of those three guys would have been great. And the Bengals were at 33, and we're talking, let's see, we're talking 25, 26, and 27 or something like that. I mean, all those guys almost got to where, we're thinking any one of those would be perfect, would be super at 33. So other people pulled the trigger on them, but it's not like you were way out of the ballpark. It's like, you had them rated there and others had them rated in the middle of the first round or whatever the case may be. So I feel good about a lot of players we were talked about went, in the area, but none of them slid. If any one of those three had slid to 33, boom, I think it would have been a slam dunk. Pick them, take them, whoever. I can't believe Brooks went ahead of Queen. That's a surprise as well. But, in Seattle knows what they're talking about. Seattle's historically had some pretty salty defenses. And, Brooks has got a little bit of a shoulder issue, a nagging shoulder problem. And I thought, in this era where, you really can't have your doctors put their own hands on him, that, maybe he would slide a little bit. Because he was starting to show up in a lot of these mock drafts, and his tape is impressive now. The dude impacts football games, but it's interesting to me that Queen slid as far as he did. That was a little bit of a surprise to me.
I give you credit for Jordan Brooks because I looked at 8 of what I would consider to be the most credible mock drafts first thing this morning from the most prominent draft experts. Not a single one had Jordan Brooks listed as a first-round pick. You had him on our podcast yesterday as the first pick of the second round, and sure enough, as we pointed out, he went 27th overall to Seattle.
Yeah, you looked at it, you know, 6 feet, 240 pounds, ran a 4.53. You know, ran like, you know, a fast safety. Ran like a slow corner, you know. I mean, carrying that body weight with 34, 35-inch arms, and, I mean, he impacted games now. His contact ratio is huge. And then Queen, he can run. LSU and Alabama, man, those two football teams, they're gonna. I'm sure it was a big recruiting night for both of them, locking up guys for not only this year but years down the road. Man, every time there's an NFL draft and LSU and Alabama start throwing a bunch of bodies out there in the first round, that's good for the old recruiting process.
Yeah, no question. All right, if the Bengals don't trade down at the top of the second round and you have to make a pick, who is it?
I mean, I think I'd probably go with one of the receivers. I'd probably take the highest rated receiver on the board at that point in time that the Bengals, you know, have. And I'd probably lean toward, you know, like a Chenault type guy. I'd probably go in that direction. Either that or, you know, Josh Jones. I'd say, all right, well, he's not, I don't think any of those guys, I think all of them would still be on the board past 33, or most of them. But if I had to pick one, I'd either pick probably the offensive tackle, or I'd probably take, you know, the receiver. But boy, you know what? I mean, it's almost like a flip of the coin, really, because one of those interior defensive tackles, one of those guys, that wouldn't hurt you either, honestly. But I guess I'd probably end up taking one of those receivers. Direction I'd go. What about you? What would you do?
Since I had said on the previous podcast, Jalen Johnson from Utah, I feel compelled to stick with him as my prediction. But the guy that I now have kind of fallen in love with and want is one of those wide receivers, Denzel Mims. He's got the size, 6'3", 205, 4'3", 8". You know, we all get seduced by great 40 times when it comes to big, productive wide receivers. I talked to the broadcaster at Baylor who said nothing but great things about Denzel Mims. So I'm kind of infatuated with the prospect of adding a Denzel Mims. But if I have to make the prediction, I will stick to my guns and go with Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, and again, I don't think, you know, either pick would be like, oh man, that's a stretch, that's a reach. You know, I mean, I think that all the guys we're talking about are in that range. You know, that's why in a perfect world, if somebody really has, I got to have this guy and I got to trade up and I got to do it. If somebody said, are you kidding me? Jones was a number one draft pick. He was a first rounder. You know, he might have been toward the back end of the first round, but he's a first rounder. And we are desperate. We got to take care of the right tackle position. But like I said, you know, watching him, he's got really good feet. You know, he's getting himself in position to make, you know, to block. So I mean, his footwork overcomes, I think, some of that short arm deficiency. But boy, that's the first thing I noticed was, man, he's got some short guns on him. There's no doubt.
All right, buddy, your day one duties are finished. Get some sleep. Look forward to doing it again after round three.
I'm with you, Coach.
We'll post a similar conversation after Friday night's draft coverage comes to an end. Last night, I had the opportunity to interview the first quarterback selected in the 1984 draft. Believe it or not, that year, no quarterbacks were taken in the first round. But the Bengals landed a great one at number 38 overall.
The pick is in. And now Joe Burrow will try to do what Ken Anderson and our guest Boomer Esiason did in leading the Bengals to the Super Bowl someday. Boomer, when you were drafted, you had a chip on your shoulder from lasting to the second round, even though you were the first quarterback picked that year. Joe Burrow doesn't have that chip, being taken number one overall, but he wasn't a highly touted recruit. He had to transfer from Ohio State to LSU to get his opportunity to play. Do you like his path to the NFL?
I do. As a matter of fact, you know, he's a kid who loves to play ball. He loves to play football, and that's the most important thing at our position. He's a smart kid. He learned under a pro-style offense down at LSU the last 2 years, and he really flourished this past season. I have mixed emotions. I'm so happy for the Bengal fans, for the Bengals themselves, for Athens, Ohio, everything that comes along with the first pick. But I also have a mixed emotion for Andy Dalton, because Andy Dalton gave 9 great years to the Cincinnati Bengals. Unfortunately, was unable to win a playoff game. But, you know, hopefully the Bengals will do him right and don't do what they did to me. Held on to me when David Klingler was drafted, and I had to sit through an entire year of that. Now, Andy is going to be making $16 million if he does that here. So I think that would probably, you know, take some of the edge off. But I just hope they do the right thing by Andy and move him out and let this become Joe Burrow's team from day one, because that's the way it has to be. I mean, in today's day and age, these athletes are so gifted and want to be the guy in the locker room. And I think that's what the Bengals have to do now. They have to move Andy Dalton. That's got to be like priority number one. But man, it's a great day for Cincinnati and for Athens, Ohio, and Southeastern Ohio, Southwestern Ohio. This should be something that hopefully 10 years from now, we're talking about it. We're talking about a guy who's been in many Pro Bowls and hopefully a couple Super Bowls.
What do you think it means to the other guys in the locker room to get a player coming off the greatest season in college football history?
I think it's great for them. I think there's going to be definitely an uptick intensity, I would believe. The amount of money that they spent on defense and free agency is going to help. You know, maybe they'll go more offensive players here in this draft. That's yet to be seen. But when you have a significant personality, like when Andrew Luck first walked into the Colts locker room, when Peyton Manning first walked into the Colts locker room, now all of a sudden things change. You know, Lamar Jackson walking into Baltimore, Ben Roethlisberger walking into Pittsburgh, Aaron Rodgers when he finally took over for Brett Favre. Those are the personalities that you want. And I think Joe Burrow definitely has that personality. You know, he's got a bigger personality than Carson Palmer, which is what I think this franchise needs right now.
What advice do you have for him?
The easiest thing for me to say to him is just try not to do it all yourself. You got a lot of really good offensive players around you. Jonah Williams will be back at left tackle. Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard. You got A.J. Green. You got enough talent around you that has had a lot of success at their relative positions. Let them do the heavy lifting. You just learn and study, and you become very verbose in your offense and how you decide and how you talk about defenses with Zach Taylor, and you'll just be fine. It's not all going to come in the first week. There's going to be some growing pains, and you're just going to have to deal with it just like the rest of us did. And then all of a sudden, that light will go off and you'll figure it out. And then you'll truly become the great quarterback that I think we all believe he will be.
As much as any player in franchise history, you had swagger and your teammates fed off it. Do you see that quality in Joe Burrow?
I do, Dan. He gave an interview a couple weeks ago and talked about how he hadn't lost at any level. And that's exactly what the Bengals need. Not that Andy Dalton hasn't had a great career in Cincinnati. He certainly has. You know, Joe Burrow's situation at LSU reminds me a lot of my situation at Maryland back in the 80s. When I first got there, we were running the Veer offense, and it was not good for a passing quarterback, if you will. And then 2 years left in my career there, Bobby Ross came in as the head coach and brought a pro-style offense in, and all of a sudden accentuated me as an athlete. And I think that's exactly what Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator at LSU, did for Joe Burrow. And we saw him put up numbers that we've never seen any quarterback in the history of college football do. So I think the swagger's there. I certainly think the ability is there. And I can't wait to see him wearing a Cincinnati Bengal uniform.
The day after Joe Burrow won the Heisman Trophy, you had him on the CBS pregame show. You welcomed him to the family. You gave him a Bengals helmet. Did he make an impression that day?
He did. You know, much like Carson Palmer did back, I think, in 2002, I did the same thing to him. And I always said, what I was telling Joe that day, I said, Joe, you know, Cincinnati's not a place for quarterbacks to go and die. As a matter of fact, quarterbacks flourish in Cincinnati. I did, Kenny Anderson did, Andy Dalton did, and so did Carson Palmer. So whatever negativity you're hearing about the franchise, I think it's more a perception than reality. I mean, it's a good place for quarterbacks to play, and quarterbacks have been very successful here. And even after 9 years, Andy Dalton's had a really good career there in Cincinnati. And, you know, when you change coaches, now all of a sudden, you know, it's going to have a negative effect, especially on the quarterback. And I think that's really what's happened to Andy. So now Zach Taylor is going to get his guy. And I think it's going to be a good match. It's a young head coach with a young up-and-coming quarterback who is certainly physically as gifted as any quarterback Cincinnati's ever had. You got to remember, he was an All-State point guard in Athens. And that tells me all I need to know about how he knows how to facilitate, how he sees the court, how he sees the field. And that's the way that he played at LSU. And that's the way I would expect him to play from day one when he gets to Cincinnati.
If there's a knock, it's that he doesn't have a cannon. He doesn't have a John Elway or Patrick Mahomes arm. How significant is that?
Well, what about my arm, Dan? How about my arm? Was my arm okay back in the day?
Not bad.
Yeah. You know what? Kenny Anderson had a really, I would say, if you want to talk about it on the level of strong to extra strong, Kenny had a strong arm. But what really separates quarterback is their accuracy and how they move in the pocket and how they create extra space for themselves. Joe's athletic enough to do that. He didn't have to do it as much as at LSU, maybe as maybe Josh Allen had to do it at Wyoming, where he was running for his life every game. But I think his arm is more than strong enough, and it'll be all predicated on timing and accuracy anyway. Joe Montana, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, was one of the most accurate quarterbacks, didn't have the strongest of arm. I could say the same thing about Troy Aikman. So I would put this kind of ability, arm ability, in that category. Now, whether or not he turns into a Hall of Fame player, only time will tell.
My thanks to the great Boomer Esiason, and that's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.